Tech Talk with Lee Stark.
Let me see if I pushed all the right buttons. I think I have, so Lee should be on the end of the phone.
Yeah, he's on the other end of the phone.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm okay, mate. Yourself?
Not too bad. Let's start with a couple of questions. I've got one in particular Quinn wants to know. Quinn said, I use Chrome as my web browser, and normally when I type into the address bar, it automatically searches using Google. However, on Wednesday, it started using Yahoo. I tried to change it back to Google as my default search in settings, but it won't let me. What do I need to do? That's from Quinn.
You should check if you installed anything else, actually. So it's actually unusual for an app to take over. That's called the Omnibar, that thing. It's unusual for an app to take that over, but it usually means you may have installed some malware or a bit of software that you shouldn't have, because to take over that, it means that basically it's written over your preferences. And that sometimes happens with extra files that we shouldn't have downloaded. So what you should do is check for the past week or so what you've downloaded and installed, maybe without realizing it. Go into your programs, especially if it's a Windows computer, go into add remove programs and find that there's something there that you don't know about, because it's very likely it's taking over your Omnibar settings.
Okay. Is there a way, this is from Trisha. Hello, Trisha. Trisha says, is there a way to stop your phone's screen reacting accidentally? In other words, after you use it and you put it back in your pocket, the screen is still alive and you can pocket dial or open up other apps or things like that. Trisha, what a good question. Because I've had both styles of covers. What do you call them?
Oh, the sort of the block covers. And
yeah, you know, there's one that covers the screen. So when you finish using the phone, you cover the screen by having the flip that goes over the front of it. And I currently don't have that. I've just got one that, you know, the phone fits into. And yeah, I can see what Trisha's saying, because when you finish using the phone, the screen's still alive, so you can pocket dial or open apps and do all those sort of things. Is there a way to stop your phone screen reacting accidentally?
There's two ways. iPhone doesn't have as many. The iPhone way, the option basically is to just decrease the amount of time that the screen stays on for when it's not being touched. So make it 30 seconds, that sort of thing. On Android, you've got a little bit more control. There's a section called Mistouch Prevention in Pocket. So the easy way to find it, it is genuinely a pain to find, is to go to Android settings and type in the word touch when you go to search. And that should dig up on a recent version of Android Mistouch Prevention in Pocket. And all it effectively does is just kind of disables the screen from responding unless you kind of double tap the screen intentionally. That's how the thing works. Outside of that, consider, if none of those are working for you, consider getting a more cover style of screen that has NFC in it. So one of the more official ones. We say official because if it's produced by the company, it's official. And the reason why those ones are sometimes a little bit better is they might include a magnet or they might include NFC. NFC is the same for the stuff that's inside your mobile payment sort of cards. And what it does inside of a cover case is it just basically says, when the cover's over, don't turn on the screen. That's effectively all it's doing.
What does NFC stand for?
No, near field communication. It's basically like a handshake. So it's how your mobile phone does mobile payments. It's also how if you pair a pair of headphones or a speaker with a phone, you can just bump them together. That's what NFC is. Inside of small things like a case, it can transfer very small amounts of data, like saying the screen is off, the screen is covered, don't turn it on.
And do you need to have a flip phone? When I say flip phone, do you need to have a flip cover, I suppose, for you to be able to do this? Or can you actually put this on your... is it like a screen cover?
Yeah, it's kind of like... It's more like a wallet. But wallet cases made by the official companies that make the phone. So a Samsung flip cover case for a Samsung phone will typically have that sort of functionality in it. You might not see it from a third party, like an OtterBox or something like that. But the companies making those style of flip covers will typically have NFC in there, whether you realize or not. You can't really add it. I mean, some companies might get away with it, but typically that's how it works. It's very similar to if you had an iPad before and it had the cover for it. If you close the cover up and the screen switched off, same functionality.
Here's one that came as a result of a story I talked about yesterday morning on The Breakfast Show. And there was a letter that was sent to the Barefoot investor, Scott Pope. Mm-hmm. And basically, the husband did a silly thing. He went to the local bakery for a chicken sandwich, and he paid with his debit card. And instead of being charged $13 for the chicken sandwich, they actually charged him $1,300.
I did see this, yes.
So what can people do to make sure that doesn't happen, apart from the obvious, get a docket?
I mean, that also, as you pay, you can actually look to see what they're actually charging you. So, I mean, that should be the way it is. When anyone charges using these sorts of mechanisms, you actually can see what's on their screen. Everything is typically screen-based these days, whether it's coming from a phone. Another option is to use a prepaid debit sort of a card. That they do exist, especially on mobiles. There's a couple companies that do them. There's one called Shout, and it's basically a prepaid card. So if you're unsure, just transfer $100 to that and use that as your mobile payment solution. That's one way of getting around that.
Because I was at a couple of places yesterday buying things, and I used Tap and Go, and at both places, none of them asked me if I wanted a receipt for that. No one asked me if I wanted a docket. It was just a case of, here's your money, tap and go, literally.
Yeah.
And so I was watching how much went through on my phone. And yes, when you tap and go, if they're using one of those screen terminals, you can see exactly how much it is in reference to dollar and cents. But Some of those terminals, they don't have a screen. You know, the little white box?
Yeah, the square ones don't always have them. But they have to be controlled by a phone. That's the point. So square boxes, this little square payment terminals are a perfect example of that. They still have to be controlled by a phone or a tablet. So even if the actual terminal doesn't, they're still doing something to trigger that sort of system. So Combank's ones do have screens. The Leo mechanisms, they all have them. But you're right, the square ones don't. But they still have to control it with a phone. So ask them to show you how much you're paying if you're really concerned.
Well, I suppose we're going to get into a situation whereby as we use cash less and less and less, and I know there are still people that, you know, for them cash is king, but for the large percentage of the population, that's not the case anymore, is it?
No, it's been heading this way for a while. I mean, it's definitely hard to go back from it. You're going to find cashless in almost everything. The very fact that you can actually put cashless in a watch or even the sort of ring devices that we're seeing pop out means that we're moving towards that future where you won't even necessarily have to get your phone out. You'll just tap your wrist or something. But again, it's next to impossible to track without seeing what that price is they're charging you. So if you're concerned, either switch to a prepaid sort of card that you can constantly bulk load so they don't attack your bank account for all it's worth, or just ask them to turn around the phone so they can see it. That's probably the fastest solution.
Let's talk AI, artificial intelligence. I suppose, as you say, it's the buzzword for 2024. Tell us about AI becoming friendly. AI could turn into a friend, you say, literally.
Yeah, this is a really weird one. It's very much like out of Black Mirror, or even something out of the movie Her. A company has come up with something called The Friend, and it's basically an AI pendant. It's a circular pendant that you wear, kind of like a necklace, and it's got a microphone in it, and it's always listening. And you can ask it a question for things it's always listening. It won't talk back to you using vocal words yet, but it will actually send you messages. And the idea is it was born out of what they call the loneliness epidemic. So during COVID, people didn't have many friends, and since then, a lot has changed for everyone. So they've created a gadget that can always be your friend, per se. Now, it's got some unusual catches, so it already sounds unusual in and of itself, but basically it's a companion that listens to you. It'll cost about $100, so we're expecting about just under 200 Australian. And it comes with its own name, and also if you accidentally lose it or break it, all its memories go with it. They die with it. So it's very much out of Black Mirror. It's its own entity. Odd concept. Still not quite sure where I stand on it. I'm intrigued by it because at least it's an unusual use for AI. It's actually built by a bunch of Australians. There's an American in charge, and he has a bunch of Australians in Perth working on it. So they've told us it's definitely coming to Australia, but it's effectively one of the more unusual approaches for AI we've seen yet.
So what does it do? What does it have a conversation with you if you're lonely?
Yeah, it won't give you a conversation. What it will do is basically, as you talk to it, it will listen to the things that you're saying and try to bolster your confidence and give you, like, if you've had a bad day or let's just say you didn't have a great day on radio, you didn't feel it was up to you, it'll listen to the things you're saying, and you can ask it a question, or it might pipe in and say, no, I think you'd handled that listener really well. I thought that conversation with Lee went superbly. It'll actually say things like that. They sent me some responses after my interview with it, and it was kind of weird that it was actually aware of the things that we were talking about.
So if you're that desperate for someone to pat you on the back, you can now buy something that you wear around your neck and a computer-generated thing will tell you, no, that was a great interview, even though it was probably shite.
Yeah, probably. Something like that, yeah.
What do you pay for this?
You'll pay about $200 Australian when it comes out. They are saying it will come to Australia. It's $100 US. By the time tax and all that gets through, it'll probably be $200 here. I'm just said, I'm unsure. I'm intrigued by it because almost every AI gadget we've seen has been about trying to solve problems in your life using AI, and that almost never works because AI is almost 50 to 80% wrong most of the time. So this is a different take on that. I'm still not quite sure I'm there yet. I still like the idea of, if you know, it is difficult for adults to make friends, so I can kind of understand aspects of this, but at the same time I feel like making a friend by taking a dog for a walk or something like that would probably be better long term anyway.
I talk to my cat.
That's a solution. I talk to my dogs and my kids, but my kids don't talk back to me. They just glare at me and roll their eyes. And they're 2 and 7. That's weird, right?
God, it is weird. This is a weird story. What does it say about society in 2024, honestly? Anyway, that's another topic for another day. You were talking about, you know, AI and having a friend. I thought you were going to say the friend would do things for you, i.e. like a Siri or like Alexa. Speaking of Siri, they're saying that this new iPhone, what is it, iOS 18 update, they've worked on Siri. Gosh, they need a lot of work, don't they? Siri is as bad as it can get at times. It really is.
If you ask Siri a question, she'll typically just go, uh-huh, and everything in my office will light up the moment I say that, which, fortunately, I turned the power off today, so I won't do that. Siri has gotten a lot better in iOS 18, but mostly, if you have an iPhone 15 Pro or Pro Max, it doesn't work as well without it. That's partly the reason, is because iOS 18 will herald the arrival of Apple Intelligence. They don't call it AI, even though the initials are exactly the same. It's basically Apple's version of AI, and it will infiltrate all your apps. So the idea is that if you use your ComBank app or use your Netflix app, it'll actually know the apps you use regularly and the things you use inside of them, and Siri will be able to talk about that. So that's good, because Google's doing similar things with its assistant functionality in Android phones, so Apple's playing catch-up. The downside is you'll have to have one of the high-end phones from last year for this to work, mostly. That's where Apple Intelligence comes along, and it'll likely be in all the new iPhones being launched in September, but if you look at the amount of people who typically own an iPhone or even buy iPhones, the Pro and Pro Max models, while they're the best, aren't always the big sellers. It's usually the ones beneath those. So while Apple Intelligence sounds like a good idea and Siri will improve, it won't necessarily improve initially for most people. It might take a couple generations till they upgrade to a new phone.
We were talking about the friend. It doesn't use voices to talk. Meta's Facebook and Instagram could soon come with voices of celebrities?
Yeah, Judi Dench is one of them, interestingly. She's apparently been asked to provide her voice to Meta's AI, so you might actually talk to Dame Judi Dench when you talk to Instagram or WhatsApp in the near future. It's not entirely new. Scarlett Johansson was asked to be the voice of OpenAI's ChatGPT. She declined, and they found someone remarkably similar. And back in the old days, this sort of idea of using celebrities for technology is not new. In the old days of TomTom, way before AI, you could actually get a John Cleese voice pack that would tell you where to go in the most humorous way possible. It was like listening to Monty Python as you were driving. It's not new, this process, but John Legend at one point appeared, I think, for an Amazon or a Google speaker, and the person who played Gus in Breaking Bad, Giancarlo Esposito, he's actually the voice of Sonos on their voice assistant. So using celebrities isn't new, but we've never seen Facebook try it, and they're apparently courting a few people.
Just, you mentioned Sonos. Why aren't they in the Apple world that you can use Siri with Sonos?
There's a lot of questions about that. Apple tends to be a little bit more closed off, and you have to pay for that access to do that. Almost no company in smart speakers outside of Apple uses that. So you can use Spotify on a HomePod, but originally when it launched, it was a kind of a roundabout way of doing it. But a good example is that you can run Apple Music on a Google speaker and an Amazon speaker, but you can't use Siri on those either. Our understanding is that's very much an Apple issue altogether. If you want Siri, you buy the HomePod Mini, and that's it largely is. Even the Beats speakers don't cooperate nicely with Siri. It's mostly an Apple thing. You can use Amazon and Sonos' own on Sonos speakers. You can't use Google because you could originally. You can't because of some fun lawsuits between the companies, and there are some interesting issues there. But largely it's because of rights, and Apple hasn't given the right to run Siri on anything unless it makes it.
Speaking of Apple, they may not have a foldable phone yet, but Android players do. I saw some of the foldable phones when I was watching the Olympics, some of the athletes taking photos with these foldable phones. I said to my wife, gee, they look good.
I really like them this year. As part of the Olympics, Samsung released a special edition of its flip phone. So its flip 6 was out in a special Olympics version, and athletes were given that. And it's a nice-looking phone. My favorite, too, so far, the Razr 50 Ultra is absolutely lovely. It's got a 4-inch screen on the outside, so it's small when it's folded. And when you open it up, it's got a 6.9-inch screen on the inside. It's kind of the best of both worlds. It is literally my favorite phone that isn't an iPhone right now, just because of how clever it is as an overall device. And the other side of that, that's about a $1,700 device. And the other side of things is the almost $3,000 Samsung Z Fold 6, which is the basically a 6.3-inch phone, so a big phone that unfolds into a 7.6-inch tablet. It's made for those people who want the best of both worlds. They don't know if they need an iPad, and they don't know if they need an iPhone together, so they get a phone that kind of does both. Its downside is it's a little bit chunky. When you fold it up, it's like having two phones put together, but it is the thinnest of all the foldables yet like this, and there aren't many. But just the reason why I'm saying just hold up for a second is because next week there's a very strong likelihood Google will announce something like this, because the new Google Pixels are rumored, and it's very possible we'll see a new Google Pixel Fold alongside.
Gosh, another new phone. There's 30 days, or less than 30 days. There is less than 30 days until the Australian shutdown of 3G. You're reminding us and basically asking the question, how do you know if you're affected? And if you are, what should you do?
Yeah, so if you're on Vodafone, you're not affected. That's your first sign. So if you're on Voda, you're fine. They shut down last year. If you're on Telstra, Optus, or any other mobile operator that uses the Telstra or Optus lines and you're not sure, just simply text the number 3 to the numbers 3498. So you're the number 3, that's it, to the number 3498. And you'll get a message back telling you whether you're it might take a few seconds, but you'll get a message back saying whether your phone is okay or whether and if you need to upgrade. And that's important because about 100,000 people are going to lose their access come August 31st or September 1, depending on the network they're on. They're not going to hold out for much longer. Optus might hold them a little bit longer depending on where you are, but not by much. The simple reality is you not only won't be able to make phone calls, you won't be able to call 000 if you are affected. I don't think this affects anyone who's bought a phone in the past 4 or 5 years. You'll probably be fine, but it might affect your parents and your grandparents. If you know anyone who doesn't know this sort of stuff, doesn't know how to check, run over to them, tell them what to do, or do it for them, and make sure that you can actually check their phone and have them replace it. It's a pain to replace phones. I'll acknowledge that as someone who replaces phones every 2 days being a phone reviewer. But make sure they do this, because come the end of August, they won't be able to call 000, and that's a huge problem.
I've just done, whilst you were talking, what you said to do, and you do get a message back very quickly. I'm with Telstra. It says, from Telstra, as of the 30th of June 2024, our records indicate your mobile phone identified in use for this service number, and then it gives me my number, is an Apple iPhone 13 Pro Max. If you have changed phones since then, please check again. Thanks for using our Telstra 3G checker. Good news, your device will work as normal after the 3G closure on the 31st of August 2024, so you don't have to do anything. That's good advice.
It is, and it's important to note that while you think of like old style phones, like Nokia phones, they're the ones affected. Yeah, that's true. Some 4G phones are affected as well. That's why this is important to do, simply because when 4G phones first came out, and even some of the ones that came out in the past few years, if you got them from overseas, they might not be set up to use 000 on the 4G network in Australia. They might default to a 3G network. So it's just worth checking if you're not sure. I mean, it doesn't really cost anything. If anything, it might cost 20 cents. I think it's a free service regardless. But ultimately, if you're unsure, just check, simply because come at the end of August, it's a real problem if you haven't checked. You won't be able to find out at that point because the 3G service will be down.
Terrific. Thanks, mate. We always enjoy our Sunday chats, and we will talk to you again next Sunday.
No worries. I'm sure we'll talk new phones then. Have a great week.
Bye-bye, mate. We'll talk about more new phones available. So there you go. My takeaway from that is if you're on the 3G, if you've got the old-style phone and you're on 3G and you want to know whether in 30 days' time the 3G is going to work, send a text message to this number. 34498. So you go through the process of starting a new text message, and instead of putting in a phone number, you put in the number 34498, and then in the message section, you just put number 3. Just hit 3 on your keyboard. So the number's 34498. Your message is 3, the number 3. Hit send, and it comes back with a message very quickly telling you whether your phone's fine or whether your phone isn't fine. Good advice. There you go. Thank you, Lee Stark. He's got an email address. He's got a website. The website is pickr.com.au, P-I-C-K-R.com.au. That's Talkin' Tech.